the Police Association for the Greater St. Louis area released a statement on Sunday, said that the player's gesture was tasteless, offensive, and inflammatory. Yeah, I would agree with all those things. The fact that they put their hands up, five black players in St. Louis, a suburb of Ferguson, to make their political statement, it was mostly moronic. You can say a lot of things about Michael Brown, but he absolutely did not have his hands up trying to surrender. If you have to lie, if you have to misrepresent the evidence to cling to your beliefs have no merit.
He wasn't a victim. He wasn't a victim. He made choices that got him into that situation. That's not a victim.
Yeah. Correct. Bad choices.
He made bad
tight
choices.
End, Jared Cook said, change starts with people that are the most influential around the world. Well, let me tell you something there, Jared Cook. You're an idiot. If you think that you're an influential person, then you are arrogant and presumptuous in addition to being an idiot. And there is nothing save recasting and retraining police that's going to make a difference. Yeah, Michael Brown should be alive, but not because he's a good guy. Not because he was trying to surrender. Not because he's black. He ought to be alive because the officer should not have had a handgun at the ready. He should not have had his gun available for someone else to take. He ought not have pursued him with a gun. There's lots of reasons he ought to be alive. All of them go right back to the mentality that is infecting America's police, of this aggressive mentality and this willingness to use deadly force. Those are the issues. The issues are that rather than allowing guns in public to forestall government tyranny and foreign aggression, America has put no limits on guns that are available to its police. Now, if you want to raise that issue, have at it. But to pretend that you're a victim as a black with your hands up in a surrendering mode and to do so on national television as part of a sporting event, when none of that is the issue, then you're making a fool of yourself. You're making a mockery of the system. Wide receivers Tavon Austin and Kenny Britt came out together first with the more obscured by a smoke machine in the upper reaches of the Edward Jones Dome. Stedman Bailey, Jared Cook, and Chris Givens, all of whom are black, then came out and stood together with their arms raised. Yeah, the gesture was to pretend that they were Michael Brown and that he was surrendering and was shot dead as he tried to surrender. That did not occur. Across the street from the stadium during the game, about 75 protesters, also misguided, in the second half, gathered in the second half as about 30 police wearing riot gear watched from a safe distance. Protesters chanted, "Hands up, don't shoot, no justice, no football. This is what democracy looks like, and we're here for Mike Brown." There is none of that rhetoric that is sensible. There is none of that rhetoric that adds to the solution. Speaking of not working towards a solution, the Associated Press is reporting that the Supreme Court has decided to weigh the free speech of those who use threatening language on Facebook and other social media. The justices will hear arguments today in the case of a man who was sentenced to nearly 4 years in prison for posting graphically violent rap lyrics on Facebook about killing his estranged wife, shooting up a kindergarten class, and attacking an FBI agent. Sounds like Michael Brown's rap sheet. Listen, I think that rap music, which promotes sexual promiscuity and violence, is counterproductive. Now, is all rap music like this guy's rap music that speaks of sexual promiscuity and of violence? Is it all that way? No. Is the proclivity of the music to promote themes that endorse sexual promiscuity and violence high enough that the music is actually known for it? Yeah, absolutely. So unless you want to get to the point that you're going to arrest rap artists, put rap artists in jails, those who write their lyrics, those who host their conference, their concerts, those who produce their albums, those who play their music on the radio. Unless you want to put all of them in jail, because all of them would be aiding and abetting the inappropriate message, then you can't put any of them in jail. And putting someone in jail who is writing songs about disgusting things isn't appropriate. If he doesn't act out those appropriate things, or at least threaten to act out those inappropriate things, he ought not be in jail. And this idea that if you write bad things about Susie Q, that Susie Q can't handle it and therefore will take her own life because she's been embarrassed on Facebook, and that the mother should sue Susie Q's assailant's mom who said something mean about her on Facebook, we're just way out of whack here. I mean, what are we going to do? Sue God next because he says mean things about those who are religious and political and patriotic? Those who are engaged in inappropriate behavior and belief systems? Are we going to attack him next because he holds people accountable? Will truth be a remedy in this case? If you say something hateful towards Islam that is based in the Quran and Hadith, if you say, for example, that Muhammad was a lying, slave trading, kidnapping, incestuous, raping pedophile who was also a mass murdering and ruthless terrorist, because that's offensive to Muslims, are you going to be put in jail for making those comments, even though they are not only true, but irrefutable? What's next? The Supreme Court won't ever entertain an issue regarding the Second Amendment. Of course, because they can't. Because if they were to render a decision based upon the Second Amendment, there can be no law in America that will stand up to the Second Amendment. Every law in America regarding restriction on keeping and bearing arms is unconstitutional. Every single one of them. So the Supreme Court won't meet on that. They won't take a case on it. And yet they're going to take a case on Facebook. They're not going to take a case on whether America has created another branch of its military. And that branch of the military is either federal agents or police officers or sheriff. And whether that's constitutional for them to keep and bear military arms deployed against civilians and to use drones and aircraft against civilians. They're not going to take the case as to whether or not disregarding the Fourth Amendment and depriving people of due process is appropriate when the president goes and kills Americans overseas with his drones, or when the NSA spies on Americans domestically. But they're going to hear a case as to whether or not a person can say mean things on social media. The president, meanwhile, is going to discuss the situation in Ferguson, not in Cleveland. If you're sane, if you're moral, you're discussing the case situation in Cleveland with the murder of the 12-year-old boy, not the situation in Ferguson, which was a stupid encounter by two individuals, both of whom were in the wrong. One far more wrong than the other. The White House says that the Obama cabinet meeting will actually, however, and this is a positive, review federal programs that provide military equipment to law enforcement agencies. This president has exacerbated that at a gargantuan rate. And so much of the blame for having armored personnel carriers and grenades and mortars and 50 caliber weapons and automatic weapons in the hands of police is because the Obaminator has chosen to offer them to police rather than simply destroy that which is in excess. The president is also meeting with civil rights leaders to discuss the challenges posed by, quote, mistrust between law enforcement and communities of color, end quote. I don't give a rat's patootie about what people think with regard to whether or not there is a breach of trust between African Americans and police. What matters is justice blind? Is it colorblind? And the answer is unequivocally yes. Justice is colorblind. And for the things that we ought to be concerned about, the propensity of African Americans to kill Caucasians and to kill one another, that is something we ought to be concerned about. Stupidity has a cost. Ignorance is not bliss in this case. When the Obaminator decided that he wanted to go play Cold War warrior and reignite the Cold War against Russia by agitating the thugs in Kiev to overturn their properly elected government and then to provide the money to arm the Kiev regime so that they could then induce a civil war against the ethnic Russians, he began putting sanctions on Russia for crimes that they had not committed. And as a response, when asked, well, have you thought this through, and have you come to realize that almost all of the rocket engines used on American to launch American satellites, including spy satellites, communication satellites, military satellites, are made by the Russians? And have you thought through that the only manned space program in the world today is the program of the Russians? And that America cratered its manned space capability program. That you have two astronauts that are still bebopping around on the International Space Station. How are you going to get them home? Of course, the Russian solution to that was told the Americans to build a very large trampoline. Now, it... The Obaminator, rather than lift the sanctions and say, all right, you know, this has gone too far, decides that he would burden the American taxpayer by, well, the initial outlay was $7 billion. It'll be three times that before we're done, to pay SpaceX and Boeing to resolve the problem and to get America back in the space program for the exclusive purpose of removing our astronauts from the International Space Station. Yeah, it'll be $20 billion before we're done. That's the burden of stupidity. So yesterday, the NASA, which blew up its last rocket launch. Its last rocket launch was actually a 1950s designed rocket. The rocket itself was designed after the Middleman intercontinental ballistic missiles, or atomic missile program, and the engines were 1950 engines that were designed in Russia after the Second World War that America purchased and has been just keeping around for future use. And collectively, between the integration of these two things, there was a failure, and it not only blew up the rocket and the payload, which was going to the International Space Station, but also the entire spaceport. And so now today America is going to lift off an Orion space capsule. It's always nice that we had the Apollo space capsules and the Gemini space capsules and the Mercury space capsule and the Orion space capsule, that America names its space program after Roman false gods and Greek false gods. But nonetheless, the Orion capsule is going to lift off at 7:05 a.m. on Thursday from Cape Canaveral, Florida. It's not going to carry anyone. It's designed to carry, I think, four astronauts and to keep them aloft for about 20 days. Now, there's no mission for that. This test is going to go 15 times higher than the International Space Station. There's no mission for that. I mean, you either make a capsule that will, with a commitment to take men to the moon and back, or one to take men to Mars one way. But this idea of going just 15 times higher than the International Space Station isn't far enough. And the idea that you're going to do it over 21 days isn't really long enough to have a effective mission on the moon. You don't need to do any of that if your purpose is to provide a taxi service to the International Space Station. But nonetheless, we're going to spend all the money to lift this thing up empty and then to have it go way up beyond the space station and then plunge back into the ocean and have two U.S. Navy ships, the USS Anchorage and the United States naval ship Salvor, to pick it up. What a disaster Mr. Obama made. Well, many of you know that Mr. Obama also announced plans late the previous week, to overhaul the U.S. immigration system by providing amnesty to those who had been in violation of the existing policy for the longest period of time, allowing 5 million undocumented immigrants to go from undocumented status to legal citizens. Don't let it be said that we don't search the news to find every pertinent story. This from Mary Esther, Florida. A Florida man told police that he shot his mother with a bow and arrow, which was fairly obvious, and she still had the arrows protruding from her head. Then he stabbed her to death this past Sunday because he claimed that she stole his diamonds and also gave his father cancer. Now, when you shoot your mom with a bow and arrow and the arrows are still protruding out of her head, and you're holding the knife that's covered with blood that you plunged into your mother's body, and then you tell police that you killed her because she stole your diamonds and gave your father cancer, at some point in that sound bites of information, the arresting officer should probably have ascertained this man was crazier than a loon, that he had special needs, that this man was insane. And while What he did was deplorable. He needed psychiatric help in the worst way. The Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office received the call at 2:48 a.m. Sunday, the report said that a man had knocked over Christmas decorations and had yelled while doing so. So that was the report that police were in hot pursuit of. 2:48 in the morning, his crime, he knocked over Christmas decorations and was yelling. When the deputies arrived, they found 65-year-old Gloria Watson slumped forward in a chair with the arrows protruding from her head. Watson, who admitted that he had shot her, was then charged with murder and with resisting arrest. The sheriff's office said Watson ignored repeated commands to get on the ground. After eventually complying, he stood up and retrieved a large knife from a sheath on his belt, the same knife that he had used to stab his mother. And yet the deputies used stun guns to restrain him. Compare that to what occurred with the 12-year-old boy in Cleveland. Reuters is reporting that separatists in the Ukraine are now accusing President Petro Poroshenko of violating the peace deal by deciding to suspend a law giving their region special status and signaled that they would no longer abide by it. Well, that's true. Poroshenko and the thugs in Kiev voted in parliament to provide Donetsk and Luhansk with independent status, that they would be wholly independent regions. They would make their own laws. They would provide for their own government. And yet, while doing that, he deployed ever more Ukrainian troops in Donetsk's airport and continued to bombard Donetsk with artillery operating out of the Donetsk airport. The Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republic's spokesperson in the Donbas region said that the decision undermined a protocol at the talks of September 5 in the Belarusian capital, under which a ceasefire went into effect in the Donbas region. And yet, the Kiev regime, spending American money and guided by NATO, continued to bombard the region. Poroshenko, who accuses the rebels of violating the agreement by holding leadership elections, said on Tuesday that he wanted parliaments to scrap the law offering special status to the eastern regions. Now, by the way, I despise the thugs in Kiev. You, as parliament, agree to the Russian-sponsored peace accord to give for a two-year period autonomy, which means they can form their own government, which means they need to elect their own leaders to the Donbas region, including Luhansk and Donetsk. And then you claim that the other party has violated the agreement when they hold such elections. Meanwhile, you violate the ceasefire by building your army presence at the airport of the largest city in the now autonomous region, and by using the city's airport to bombard the community. And there's little wonder that the journalists, like this article is from Reuters, can't figure that out. That they can't figure out that the Russian separatists did nothing wrong, and that the Ukraine regime did everything wrong. And yet, they will gleefully print another article, Putin bad, for an unthinking public. Wow. What a disaster. And to think that America is not only the chief sponsor of these idiots, that we've taken them on as dependent children, funding their every whim. The law should have given Donetsk and Luhansk rights to use their rights to run their own affairs and to shield everyone from prosecution and from bombardment. But the Kiev regime saw fit to disregard all of that. What a disaster. Now we'll blame the Russians for the breakdown in the peace accord they sponsored. In a related story, two teenagers died and four were mutilated when an artillery shell fired from the airport by the Kiev regime hit a school playing ground in the eastern Ukraine. The attack came as both sides in the conflict accused each other of tearing up the peace deal. Now, keep in mind, the Kiev regime is claiming that Donetsk canceled the deal by holding the very elections they would need to hold to be an autonomous region, to self-rule. And the ethnic Russians in that region are holding the Kiev regime accountable for breaching the deal by escalating attacks, by military bombardment of Donetsk from its airport. These things are not comparable. To present them in a manner of both sides are calling the other bad is stupid on behalf of this journalist. The fragile ceasefire has been in place since the 5th of September, although hundreds of people have been killed since then, mostly by the bombardments perpetrated by the Kiev regime and financed by America. More than 4,000 people have now been killed in the eastern Ukraine with American-financed weapons, with American intelligence. 4,000 people have died in a conflict that began when the United States instigated the riots that turned deadly, whereby the elected government was overturned by thugs. It's a continual bloodletting that stains the conscience and soul of the United States. And now we have children dying and their bodies mutilated by the Kiev regime. I had started to share a presentation by Putin at Sochi when he had the opportunity to address the International Discussion Club. And I would like to continue that. He introduces himself and he says, "Let me say in this respect that I will not let you down, that I will speak directly and frankly. Some of what I may or might say may seem a bit harsh, but if we do not speak directly and honestly about what we really think, then there is little point in even meeting in this way. It would be better in that case to just keep to diplomatic get-togethers where no one says anything of real sense. Recalling the words of one famous diplomat, you realize that diplomats have tongues so as not to speak the truth." Boy, is that an honest assessment. We get together for other reasons. We get together so as to talk frankly with each other. We need to be direct and blunt today, so as not to trade barbs, but so as to attempt to get to the bottom of what is actually happening in the world. Try to understand the world is becoming less safe and more unpredictable, and why the risks are increasing everywhere around us. That is our mission today. Today's discussion takes place under the theme, New Rules or a Game Without Rules. I think that this formula accurately describes the historic turning point we have reached today and the choice we all face. There is nothing new in the, of course, in the idea that the world is changing very fast. I know this is something you have spoken about. It is certainly hard not to notice the drastic transformation in global politics and economy and public life and in industry and in social technologies. As we analyze today's situation, however, let us not forget history's lessons. First of all, changes in the world order and what we are seeing today are events on this scale have usually been accompanied by, if not global war and conflict, then by chains of intensive local level conflicts. We will return to Putin's address in a moment. Putin continued, "The main thing is that a system needs to be developed, and despite its various shortcomings, needs to at least be capable of keeping the world's current problems within current limits, within certain limits, and regulating the intensity of the natural competition between countries. Otherwise, we'll be left with no instruments other than brute force. What we need to do is to carry out a rational reconstruction and adapt it to the new realities in the system of international relations. But the United States, Putin says, having declared itself the winner of the Cold War, saw no need for this. Instead of establishing a new balance of power essential for maintaining order and stability, they took steps that threw the system into sharp and deep imbalance." Well, that's all true. The Cold War ended, but it did not end with the signing of a peace treaty with the clear and transparent arguments on respecting existing rules or creating new rules and standards. By the way, and there was no winner of the Cold War. This created the impression that the so-called victors in the Cold War had decided to pressure events and reshape the world to suit their own needs and interests. If the existing system of international relations, international law, and the checks and balances in place got in the way of these aims, this system was declared worthless, outdated, and in need of immediate demolition. Pardon the analogy, but this is the way riches, the rich behave when they suddenly end up with a great fortune. But in this case, in the shape of the world leadership and domination. Instead of managing their wealth wisely, for their own benefit too, of course, I think they have committed many follies. We have entered a period of differing interpretations and of deliberate silences in world politics. International law has been forced to retreat over and over by the onslaught of legal nihilism. Objectivity and justice have been sacrificed on the altar of political expediency. Boy, that's true. Arbitrary interpretations and biased assessments have replaced legal and just norms. Also true. At the same time, total control over the global mass media has made it possible, when desired, to portray black as white and white as black. That's also true. In a situation where you've had domination by one country and its allies, or its satellites, rather, The search for global solution often turned into attempts to impose a universal recipe. This group's ambitions grew so big that they started presenting the policies they put together in their corridors of power as the view of the entire international community. But this was never the case. Boy, is that true. Where America states that, you know, the international community is opposed to this, that, and the other thing, or is in favor of this, that, and the other thing, when it's strictly American policy. The very notion of national sovereignty became a relative value for most countries. Yeah, relative value. We invaded countries, one after another. In essence, what was being proposed was the formula, the greater the loyalty towards the world's sole power center, the greater this or that ruling regime's legitimacy. So, by way of example, if Saudi Arabia were to pledge loyalty to the United States, then the dictators in Saudi Arabia would be considered legitimate. But they're no more legitimate than is Assad or Saddam Hussein, who didn't pledge their loyalties to the United States and therefore were considered illegitimate. He's made another accurate assessment. The measures taken against those who refuse to submit are well known and have been tried and tested many times. These include the use of force, economic and propaganda pressure, meddling in domestic affairs, and appeals to a kind of supralegal legitimacy when they need to justify illegal intervention in this or that conflict or toppling inconvenient regimes. We have seen of late increasing evidence, too, that outright blackmail has been used with regard to a number of leaders. He has penned the tale on the donkey that is the United States.